Good afternoon and happy Monday afternoon. And to those of you that love Monday, like yours truly here. And this time is home run time. Home run time with none other than Dwight and Helmut on Eagle FM. Today is the 19th. Teachers, police officers, nurses, you guys.
I was hoping you wouldn't mention that.
You guys, this world would not revolve without you guys.
Helmut, you know that there is like literally 2 weeks of too much time before 31 May.
Look at it like a political campaign. Yeah. You know, politicians, you know, they will be silent, you know, they'll be silent like for 4 years. And that fifth final year when they say change in administration, they'll be like, you know what? We have observed and we're here to tell you. These are your problems, and this is what we kind of figured out, that's how we're going to solve them. And then you look at the structure, it doesn't match with the problems on the ground. And you're like,
are you not talking about budgeting and surviving between paydays?
Yeah, that.
Because I'll tell you now,
if
you employ budgeting, you are depressed before you get to the payday.
I've noticed, I learned that... in January and February this year, not just any other year, it was this year. Because this is the time when the schools are reopening and, now you have to deal with your January and the January of your relatives and, siblings and everyone that's going back to school, and everyone has a lot of problems to solve now, and they're all looking at you for some type of assistance. That was me the whole December. I'm going to have to budget. January comes, screw this budgeting. This is very depressing.
It's not just that. It's also, I know we're going on a little bit of a financial tangent, guys, but yeah, it happens. It's 2025. We have to sort of like, what do they call that? Step up the conversation quality as well. We have to sound like adults as well. But yeah.
Way to make it diplomatic.
So, Helmut, the worst thing primarily is even if you've got to look at things like, those jokes that the guys sometimes make in January, how many months does this month January have? Mm-hmm. And then you're only at the 5th of January, but you've already blown like your budget. And those particular... It happens to all of us.
25 days, actually, 24, but they look like 24 months.
Yeah, they look like 24 months. So the particular pains that people obviously experience is usually, it's a miscalculation on the budgeting aspect that happens from December specifically. How much you don't know how many times I've hated Decembers.
December.
And then you've got those family members that have expectations for Christmas gifts.
Yep.
And you're like, no, bruh, I can't be budgetless by the 1st of Jan. This does not work. But yeah, obviously Namibian consumerist life being Namibian consumerist life.
More like global, dude.
I know, because there was a phenomena I came across one time, Helmut. This is now actually before I started working ever. So, still a full-time student way back in the 2000s. And, on Sky News, they were talking about, this was literally the 5th of January, or was it the 10th of January? Sky News, which is the UK version of the Sky News platforms, were talking about personal bankruptcy. It's the first time I've heard of personal bankruptcy. The person has a salary, Helmut.
Personal what?
Bankruptcy. The person has a salary. They have a job, But the person bankrupted themselves. They've maxed out all credit avenues of credit.
Mm-hmm.
And they've maxed out their budgeting because of 25 and 26 December. And the UK has literally, every year they do this data analysis of people who declare themselves personally bankrupt.
It's for Christmas and New Year celebrations.
Just because of Christmas, that from 25 or 24 December to 1 January. Every year, I was like, what kind of phenomenon is this? And then I realized that it was the same particular thing was happening in Namibia. It's because people fall into the trap. They get paid on the 24th or the 23rd of December. And then people believe it's now party time for that 5, 6, 7 days.
You know, just live a little.
Rock more. Yeah. Yeah, it's more like a rock star living. And then by the 5th of Jan, you have your fellow Namibians asking you, they even want to tell you they don't know where their lives are going on the 5th of January.
What am I going to do? I think that's why I figured out, a strategy, especially for this one that I use.
Yeah.
I hate going home during December. I just, I'll pick somewhere in the middle of the year because December has a lot of expenses, both during the holiday and the beginning of the next year because of the whole school thing.
Mm.
Yeah, now you have to factor in a lot of things, not just for you, but also for relatives. Now that is for relatives. And we don't even have families of our own to take care of. Now factor that in and it would be some, economic suicide. But, that's a whole different discussion. Let's get back to today's discussion. That's let me just be honest. It's not equally depressing.
No, it's not. However, it is a bit, it's a bit on the green side of things because it actually takes us back, Helmut, to a talk we had last year, the one about agroforestry.
Yeah.
It really just takes us back in that particular direction. Dear listeners, obviously, we have to apologize that, we were a little bit late specifically, and the detour. We were a little bit late in terms of our final planning for our poster. So we'll let you know what we're actually talking about as always. What we are looking at today is that earlier in this month, the UN Forum on Forestry, or the UN Forum on Forests, took place, and it was a little bit of an interesting particular discussion. Reason being, dear listeners, because this ultimately means that the previous discussions regarding the aspect of forestry in like Namibia has been conducted and actually comes through from an international or a multi-platform, multilateral landscape like the UN Assembly itself.
Yeah.
Or the United Nations, not the Assembly, the United Nations itself. Now, there's something interesting that spans from this, Helmut. Now, I first, to highlight what the particular forum started off on, because this obviously was the sixth or the fourth session of this thing.
This was the 20th.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Then it's something else that they've got to have the fourth of associated to it. But this particular session started off with the chair, the guy from Turkey, because they all pronounced their names so inaudible, even though the names were there. But anyway, so the chair... And now,
Ismail Balan, if I heard that correctly, the Turkey guy.
Yeah, but...
who is a forest engineer by profession. I had to Google that. I'm like, forest...
It's not just him. It's not just him. The lady that was sitting two seats away on the other side of the UN General Assembly president.
Yeah.
The lady that spoke not at the end before they started with the countries and the announcements.
Yeah.
The lady that also highlighted primarily what they're going to do here, who said her father was a father, where he said her father comes from forestry. And I was like, from forestry? Huh? Did they live in the forest? But then obviously I heard that, from, obviously discerning what they meant is that specifically that he had himself and she was also, from this particular aspect. So getting back. In all of the three particular speeches, they all highlighted. That's now the UN General Assembly guy, the UN General Assembly president, the chair of the UN Forum on the Forests, and that lady whose dad comes from forestry. I'm using someone else's words here, guys. So, just be patient in that scenario. So, they all singled out specifically that the funding crunch is going to make things a lot more difficult for the rest of this year, specifically for, the Forum on Forests, which is a unique particular thing. Now, I watched the whole engagement, Helmut, up until, who was the first country that spoke? Not Iran. Because I know Iran's guy was cut short during his engagement. He went over his 3 minute or 5 minute time frame.
Yeah.
But all of the countries spoke of the, it's almost like, okay, the Russian guy mentioned that Putin, authored a decree. The Iranian guy spoke of policies that they've been enacting in terms of preserving certain particular landscapes in Iran. There was another country. There was two countries before them. But anyway. Oh, Brazil. Brazil was one of them. And Brazil has obviously got the Amazon forest.
I'm so glad you go to Brazil, but go on.
But Brazil was number three. I need some serious, you know, sort of like extra...
Dude.
Extra storage capacity, because I, the first two guys were sounding the same, and then Brazil's guy came in. But anyway.
With the preservation of the Amazon rainforest.
Yeah. But they all basically spoke of that they've had to enact specific, government, not just policies, but legislation to enhance their protection on forestry, specifically, all kinds of vegetation, because you can't just say you're protecting the tree, but you're cutting down a bush right next to the tree, because in all aspects, it protects topsoil.
Yeah.
The whole aim of forests is that you protect certain particular,
The natural, the natural way that it's carpeted is, it feeds into each other in a very symbiotic way.
Yeah.
Now, Brazil, when Brazil is a very, interesting part of it. Now, I'll get to why I'm saying that, especially about Brazil.
Mm.
But, the finance part, like, every discussion that we sit, and talk about here, whether it's, energy mix and energy security, or, access to energy funding, which led to a lot of African countries, more like a lot of African-based organizations that are, a lot of African-based organizations coming up with their own, with an African-based financial institution that will help fund, energy sources that are fossil fuel-based, because accessing that funding of fossil fuel-based energy generation from outside the country, especially developing, developed countries, has become very difficult.
Mm.
So, you see, the funding there is popping up. That's with regards to energy security. Now, when we're talking about the progress of SDGs last year, what's the first, what's the first hurdle in the road for that? Again, funding. And then when you talk about the commitments towards, towards energy transition with regards to climate change, the first thing that comes up is, especially when it comes to developing countries, they need funding so that they that will help them with that energy transition. And when it comes to basically overall developmental projects, economic wise, it's funding all over again. So now, when you look at it, you have you can talk about a lot of social programs that are going, taking place across the world. Funding is the biggest issue. How many countries cried foul when Donald Trump decided to cut funding from from USAID? The world over. You see, funding seems to be like it's very good to have a summit like or a conference like the one that they had, sitting there and basically laying out the best ways to protect the environment.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Funding is needed to carry that out, because no one will just go out there and volunteer to do any of this. A lot of people, and a lot of those people, if you're going to send people in the middle of nowhere, more like in the middle of a forest to do any kind of investigation, they will need, a lot of gears, both outfit wise and both machine wise. Now, all those things require funding. Even if those people participated voluntarily, there is no shop or, industry that will give you the gears for free. So funding is very central, for that. But Brazil, on the other hand, this event could not have come at the worst time for Brazil, because remember, COP30 is taking place in Brazil this year. Yeah. And one of their initiative is to build a 13 kilometers road through, I think, the Amazon jungle, which now they had to cut a bunch of trees to make a way for that road that will lead attendees of COP 30 to attend any. You see the problem?
A climate change summit engagement.
Yes. One of which improves. Okay. When we say climate, what do we mean? We know that, trees can't survive without us. Mm. We can't survive without trees. So it's a, you know, so it's a symbiotic relationship. They, you know, oxygen for them is a waste product. Oxygen for us is an intake. Carbon dioxide for us is a waste product. Mm-hmm. Carbon dioxide for them is an intake. So we need this relationship with each other. Now, the irony for, the irony for Brazil is they are cutting thousands of trees to build a road that will lead people to a summit where they will talk about how to save the environment.
Which is going to be in the Amazon.
In the Amazon. Put in mind they are going there with a, with cars. Imagine the convoy. So it's carbon dioxide check and there've been criticisms also of, of a large chunk of carbon, a large chunk of the Amazon jungle being cleared by, I think, is it soy bean farming?
Well, first, under, what was the president's name? The previous guy, the guy that was like Trump, general, Bolsonaro. So under Bolsonaro, was pro cattle farming.
And, and Brazil is a huge red meat supplier
into the world. I think Brazil, Australia, Argentina, and it's Brazil, Australia, Argentina, and the US, they are sort of like the top 10 red meat producers of, you know, from cattle farming. And the issue there was that, Bolsonaro was saying the farming industry, agriculture in its entirety, will not stand back or should not be negatively influenced because of climate change, activists shouting from wherever.
Hugging trees.
Or that one too. From far.
I love trees, but come.
Or telling people not to, you know, drive fossil fuel cars from wherever they are. And the first thing that they're saying, because one of the first particular harmful agricultural practices that has been pointed out is if you have too much cattle, you're a country that has a huge red meat market or industry.
Yeah.
That becomes a problem because you.
Of the whole methane.
I wanted to make it sound more, you know, more sexier, Helmut.
Please go.
Because of the farting cattle syndrome, supposedly. I still tell this day, dear listeners, please do not think it's a joke. I had to read this up. You can find it at the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, the IPCC. They will tell you this. There are reports that agriculture and specifically animal farming, specifically cattle farming, is a problem because if you have too many cattle, you'll have too many farting cattle.
Okay, now this means that means this is because of the way that the a cow's digestive system works, right? So that means chances are very high every herbivore has the same impact on the atmosphere.
Exactly.
So what do we do with all the wild animals?
Now ask yourself a question. The wild animals are obviously being highlighted specifically as they are part of the nature ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complete picture there.
Yeah.
But if you come here with your domesticated animals, you're obviously coming with, like, let's say there are five cattle farmers right next to each other.
Yeah.
And each one of them has 100 animals. And let's say that which is in the natural environment, there's only 500 animals living in that natural environment. But each farmer shows up there with 100. The question that you would ask yourself is, you know, what's the trade-off here? What's actually going on here?
Yeah, now, thank you for using the word trade-off. Because now another discussion that comes here is you will have to incentivize that farmer so that they can transition from using, a large number of cattle as a source of income to a different one.
Mm.
So you can't just, you could just pop up and start, telling them to reduce the amount of cattle at no cost. Until you realize that they will, at least I would, point at two examples.
Mm.
Remember Haiti?
Yep.
Yeah, those that lost their, you know, those, okay, Haiti was forced to pay reparation.
They're still paying it.
They are still paying. Supposedly. Hang on a second.
Yeah, that's also the issues after that last president, the one that was killed by the mercenaries, the American mercenaries.
Of course they were. Now, that brings up again a discussion of, okay, when the British, abolished slavery, they had to compensate all the slave owners that lost their quote-unquote property. And I think the British taxpayers had to pay that reparation until, when was that, 2015? Now, I think this discussion is going to pop up really fast. If someone that was doing something that was not only legal back then, but just it didn't make it morally right. What are you going to tell someone that has a farm of which is their only source of revenue to if you're going to ask them to transition, obviously they will start asking questions like, if I stop doing this, what else am I going to do? So I think this is where the financial part now comes in, because you will have to, there's a transition period. Unless you have a large amount of money to give one farmer just one go, with especially Brazilians, or they can farm it.
The uniqueness of this helmet is...
And the reaction, you can look at it from the BBB party. That's the reaction you are going to get if you just shove them down there.
Who's the BBB party?
The Dutch guys that formed their own political party.
Oh, the farmers.
Yeah.
No, but those guys, Helmut, that there's an issue in the European context. Because in the European context, they have a dilemma, for example. The dilemma is that they've got politicians who they classify as right wing, which is just technically ultra conservative or very conservative politicians. These guys are championing that immigration is bad into their countries. Because there is good and there is bad immigration. Let me state that today. Namibia also experienced it. Because just earlier today I also had such a particular discussion where someone highlighted specifically, how would you feel, Dwight, if Namibia saw 700 migrants show up by boat on Namibia's coast?
Yeah.
And I was told 700 per day. And I said 700 times 365. That's 250,000 people showing up every day. And those are the issues specifically that Southern Europe faces and Western Europe. Because a lot of the migrants say, a lot of them come from war zones.
Yeah.
A lot of them come from war zones. And a lot of them can't speak French, or they are English-speaking. And then they say, literally, we'll either go into Germany, we'll either go into Scandinavia, or we'll try and get into England. Now, here's the major thing, Helmut. You can obviously see the relationship between what I'm highlighting, because a lot of these migrants either, like I said, come from war zones, or they come from very unstable countries, or they come from scenarios where...
There are some dictators in power.
That too, which usually is the war scenario, or this particular migrant was someone that's running away as a criminal, because that is also what many of the particular, not just African, but Middle Eastern leaders have said. The guys that the Europeans accept as migrants into their countries are sometimes the people that ran away, they committed a crime and then they ran away. They decided to run away. And in most cases, you can see usually how that makes sense. Because if you look at the migrant, they're all young men.
Oh, yeah.
They're all young men.
Able-bodied men.
Okay, now that's issue number two, right? The politics of immigration happening in the European context. The second scenario is all those European countries then went and signed, what's the thing's name? The particular legislation around the EU's green climate deals, their climate ambitions, and for them to transition from fossil fuel and Russian dependency on Russian gas to obviously them being self-sustainable.
Yeah.
Now you're obviously seeing the investments taking place in countries like Namibia, for example, like the green hydrogen projects and so forth. Now that transition actually means that they've got to maintain what they committed to as individual countries in the EU to what? Their nationally determined contributions.
Yep.
Now, that's the thing that you and I have highlighted before. Namibia, we have our nationally determined contributions. But Namibia can't just go it alone. We need these advanced economies to also play their part in changing the impacts of climate change. Just look at what happened with this rain, Helmut, earlier this year.
Yeah.
Helmut, I've never, to tell you now, honestly, I've never seen rain like this in Namibia.
Like that heavy?
It was not just about the quantities.
It's also the frequency.
It's also the frequency. But it's also what they look like. The characterization, the representation of the cloud cover.
Yeah.
We've got a short ad break, guys, coming up.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most important, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare,
Paratus. Did you know that in Namibia over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Welcome back. The time is just a minute past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Or you.
Yeah.
Fit all the, you know, agreed to, or more like implemented the, the agreements in their respective countries.
Yeah. So when you mentioned that Triple B or BBB party in the Netherlands, the issue in the Netherlands was, Helmut, that the Netherlands signed on to the same particular just energy transition or energy transition requirements and conditions from the EU. And they now had to transmit those changes into the Dutch agricultural system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, Helmut, the Netherlands is a huge producer of flowers. One of their largest products is an agricultural product, which is technically a natural product.
Mm.
Lilies. Is it lilies? But okay.
Is it lilies or tulips?
Or tulips. Yes. Tulips. Tulips. So they've got tulip production. But it's not just about the tulips. Remember, when you look at agriculture, Helmut, agriculture changes the landscape and the particular necessary, so we can even say aspects of like, nutrients in the soil, the kinds of insects that are attracted to the specific zone, the kinds of small animals that are also attracted. For example, what many people will not tell you if you are a crop farmer is that you attract some kinds of small animals, which are usually rodents. Or you attract some kinds of insects, which can be, for example, like this red locust that popped up here in 2020.
Yeah.
Or it can be other particular sort of like plant-based illnesses or diseases that impacts the fruit, the thing that you want to harvest.
Yeah.
When you look at these particular discussions, you obviously realize that the human brought in a specific mechanism, tries to control that area where that mechanism is based, and thus tries to reap some sort of either, you know, self-sustainable action, which is, you know, to live off, or an economic one, which is to sell to live off. And then you see all kinds of other species showing up. Well, obviously the best representation has been the guy that had the small little backyard garden and the small little rodent shows up. He puts in a camera because he couldn't understand why were some parts of his crops disappearing during the night. And then he puts in a little camera in the garden and then the small, it's known as a, okay, but it's a small rodent. It's about this big, Helmut. When it stands on its hind legs. Yeah. But the, okay, it's, this is not small. Yeah, I know. This is pretty big. So, the rodent would come in, sit in his garden, take the tomatoes and chew the tomato in front of the camera so that the guy knows who's the guilty party.
Who's boss?
Who's the guilty party? So, from such particular scenarios, you then realize, okay, so the human action is causing certain particular knock-on effects in the natural environment.
So it's causing some disruptions to food chains, food webs?
Food chains, soil structures, water tables is usually the immediate ones that they think about.
Yeah.
Another one that also stems from this is, for example, I don't think we did a discussion, Helmut, about biosafety or the Biosafety Council of Namibia and the Biosafety Act of Namibia.
I don't think we have.
Okay. So when I did those talks specifically on the business and economic segment last year and the year before that, 2023, the Biosafety Council and the Biosafety Act, their role is specifically to play, their role specifically in Namibia is to have this, actually what they would stand for fits in nicely with the UN Forum on the Forests, meaning trying to preserve natural habitats, vegetation, forest lands, and all these other kind of things.
Yeah.
Because one of the first things that that Namibia's Biosafety Council, for example, has to try and control is the use of genetically modified seeds in agriculture. Because genetically modified seeds, Helmut, can potentially lead to just a small insect. Because we all know, we've been taught, I'm assuming that the listener out there remembers their life sciences from high school. We've all been taught specifically how some plants actually produce or reproduce. They are dependent upon a small insect landing on the female plant or the male plant. And it carries what we call the seeds or the seed pods or germination is the next step after that. But it's literally the particular element that would start the germination on another plant of the same species. We all know how that works. You just need a bee. You just need a little bird. You just need a horse walking against the grass or a lion or your dog in your yard who just needs to scrape against the plant, carry on the seeds and distributes the seeds by shaking them off somewhere else.
They're all, evolved into dispersing their seeds in a whole different way. It's either they have a surface like Volcra.
Yeah.
Which gets attached to pretty much anything it gets close to or comes to, comes into contact with. And then it's when you find out that you have some of those things like on your feet or on your on your trouser, they are lodged there. You just take them off and throw them somewhere.
Mm.
Welcome, congratulations! You have just participated in seed dispersal.
Exactly. Now here's what happens then. What we tend to forget usually when it comes to genetically modified things is that the same particular plants, which are just, changed in a lab somewhere, their abundance can be promoted through such the similar action.
Yeah.
Because in nature, and even in the food systems discussion of thing, is that there are mutually beneficial or mutually dependent relationships that exist in nature. You would sometimes see that little bird sitting on a hippo's back. Have you ever seen those pictures, Helmut?
Oh, yeah.
Or that little bird sitting in a crocodile's mouth.
Yeah.
That little bird is the toothpick for the crocodile. That little bird on the hippo's back is the...
No, that is true.
That little bird on the hippo's back is literally the lice cleaner or the lice harvester. Because for that little bird, the lice is its food. That little insect,
uh-huh.
that little pest insect,
yeah.
the lice is its food. And the hippo is just going like, thank you, my guy. I really don't have arms to scratch my back. Or, for example, what is the other thing that some of the animals also do? Some of the animals also eat certain particular things and then they defecate it out. Mm-hmm. Certain plants, Helmut, did you know that certain plants in Namibia, they need to be ingested into the animal. The animal needs to eat something of the plant.
Yeah.
And the animal then needs to go and defecate the seed out somewhere else. Those enzymes, those bacteria help the seed pod or whatever of that plant to literally continue surviving going ahead.
There's a tree that I'm not sure if those trees are still, you know, if the trees are extinct or not. They're known as a dodo trees, which were or are native to the island, to the island of, I think Mauritius, where you found the dodo, the dodos, the, giant flightless birds, which are now extinct.
Mm.
The trees seem to have shared a relationship between, you know, with the dodos, that their seeds had to gain some kind of nutrition or some kind of chemicals in the digestive system of the bird for them to successfully germinate. Now that the birds are extinct, how the heck are they going to survive? Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah.
So what does that mean about the continuation of the plant species? So, when you look at it, what you're going to see is that a lot of different, how to put this, life on Earth, whether you're a human being or basically all, you know, all across living organisms, all across species, we all survive by, by having some kind of living organism in us.
Mm.
You know, you and I sitting here and wherever you are listening from, you have bacteria or bacterium in your stomach that would cause a lot of chaos if they were not there. They have to be there.
You say it will cause
a lot of chaos. Actually, one thing that you'll find somewhat to some degree disturbing, if not fascinating, is that a human being, it say that a human being has more microorganism than our body cells.
Helmut, a human bite is more dangerous than a dog's bite. Do you know that?
One more time.
A human bite is more deadlier than a dog's bite.
Do you know what you just did?
Yes.
You've just... declared French kissing as was one of the most dangerous activities you can.
Not really. That's supposedly one of the most healthiest activities.
Until she asks who is Amanda.
Not just that. Until you also find out that some people don't brush their teeth. I know. It gets morbid very quickly.
Yeah.
But the reason as to why I said that particular statement, and I tried looking it up, much of the sources or the literature that I found is that they highlight that because humans are omnivores, as an omnivore, there's only one other animal like us that also is an omnivore. It's the pig, the domesticated pig. We as omnivores, we've got a diverse diet. However, dogs form part of a specific kind of carnivorous animal. Dogs, Helmut, are endurance animals. They are endurance hunters. These are, for example, if you had to look at any kind of a wolf species, these are animals that can follow their prey for long distances. They can walk it out. Patience is their game. They will chow you. Either today or tomorrow, you will be the food.
Sooner or later.
They will get to you. Now.
And that's painful.
Yeah. The dogs do have that element of endurance to them. That's also why they tell you, don't feed your dog like you feed a human every meal time a day. It's twice a day based upon the size of the dog's paw.
Don't feed them on your anatomy. Yeah.
Yeah, on your humans, on your human specifications.
Yeah.
Now, dogs have controlled bacteria in their mouth, except most now when you get to scavengers like hyenas that can eat dead meat. then you've got another question, you've got another thing going there for you.
They also, I think they also have a whole different anatomy going on that, you know, that enables them, like, that makes them adopted to that type of fridge-less diet.
Yeah. Well, supposedly the most deadliest bite on the planet is supposedly the Komodo dragon. It's not a real dragon. It's just a large minotaur lizard.
Just large lizard, yeah.
Yeah, and it is fast, deceptively fast. But anyway.
They're also venomous, those things.
Yeah. No, they're not venomous. It's the bacteria in their mouth. If they bite you, you can basically, it's like as good as being bitten by a poisonous snake. Mm. Because there's so much bacteria your body has to fight. You literally either die from septicemia, which is an overproduction of white blood cells, or literally the bacteria infecting you to death. But we've got an ad break.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% off its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it. Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
Olium nangeshifa noahara kushivifa oma kuroyo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enyamukuru olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mwamberewa konorahita tu natu, mbali oheta tu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile?
Welcome back, but before we continue, let's take a quick live read.
Velvita University, where everyone is an achiever. This is the online qualifications postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. Applications are now open. Velvita University is inviting applications into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Occupational Health and Safety. To enroll in this course, or in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate diploma in higher education level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a 1 year blended course. Master of higher education. This is to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. The time is 17 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to a Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Yeah. So just remember, human bite can be powerful. Very, and then you get, dangerous. If you've ever bitten by a human, Helmut, I'm not talking in the romantic side of things. I'm talking about in real life. Conflict, life and death, you accidentally fighting someone. Not a zombie movie, please.
Happened a lot growing up. Not the zombie part, the sibling bite.
No, yeah. Well, yeah, we all had those siblings that sometimes just decided, you know, I don't know if they were teething or if they were testing out their new dentals, but yeah.
Yeah. Don't be deceived. They may only be like, you know, just four of them in the mouth. Don't put your finger in there.
Four there.
Don't put your finger in there.
Now you're making me remember something. I feel sorry for moms. especially breastfeeding moms.
Seriously, you just had to go there. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
No, it's part of life. It's part of the, and
actually it's what makes life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving on from that particular point. So when we get to the aspects of biosafety, biodiversity, and other particular discussions that obviously form part of this discussion. Remember, a tree or forest, Helmut, doesn't just survive on its own. There are other things that live off it, around it, in it, depend on it, or actually thrive or flourish within the vicinity of forests and trees. So this particular endeavor, like you highlighted, it will need money. But it doesn't mean that that the countries now stand still. They've got their own things happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I think if you look at, just the life, not in human beings, not in any philosophical way, just the, you know, from, you know, just from a natural biological standpoint, you will see that, biological environmental standpoint, you will see that, no living organism is isolated in, in a way that it, in a way that it's, it lives its life. Take, for example, which is one of those questions that I always ask myself when I read of, or when I watch movies like, take, for example, Star Wars, or any intergalactic travels. You know, they land on a foreign planet. The question I'm asking myself is, now, for you to survive on any foreign planet, that planet not only must it have, as an extra comedian, now I'm jealous. Not only must that planet have the right, the right temperature, but also the right microorganisms that you and I need to survive. Take, every time that astronauts go to the ISS, what happens to them when they come back? They lose a lot of bone mineral density just because they stayed away from gravity long enough.
Yep.
So they will have to, they will have to get used to gravity over and over again. Homeboy is dying. Now.
No, I'm trying my best not to.
I know. It's not rocket science for us to realize that preserving the forest, more like preserving trees, is something that we have to do for the sake of, literally, for us to survive, trees must survive. And if you look at our dependency on them right now, it's obviously threatening their existence.
Yeah.
We need the land they are on for farming because, well, our population keeps, well, shooting through the roof. And we need, we need them for furnitures, and then we need them for food. We need them for a lot of things. That also now brings up the main discussion around this whole, United Nations forum on forest. How do you conserve the forest? One example that I can give when it comes to the preservation of that is two countries also, India and Brazil. India and Brazil have one thing, at least that I know of. I think it can also be maybe one or two, or maybe a lot of countries in South America. They have, they have one thing in common. There are a lot of unconducted tribes living in the middle of the Amazon jungle. So the government of Brazil, and this is the same thing that you see with the government of India. They just decided, that whole anthropological nonsense of the 18th and 19th century and 20th century, if they don't want to be contacted, leave them. Now, somewhere in the Andaman Sea is the Sentinelese Island, it's in the archipelago of the Andaman Islands. There's an island known as the Sentinelese Island. There's a tribe on that island that was contacted by the British in a very unfriendly way. They kidnapped some of them. They barely survived outside the island. Again, their anatomy is suits, they have a symbiotic relationship with that island. They are suited both environmental wise, both temperature wise, or maybe even anatomical wise for that island. When you take them out, they need time for them to adjust to that new environment. I mean, I would use one guy that went to Russia for less than a week and came back and almost died. You see, well, obviously that's because they needed transition is needed for human body. We can survive, but transition is needed. But also the surviving part, I wouldn't count on that because sometimes you cannot survive.
If you're talking about that island, Helmut, it's mostly the island off India's coast.
Yeah. And by the way, you are not allowed to get any.
The Indian government.
The closest you can get is 4 kilometers, I think.
Accidentally, you can come 4 kilometers close.
Without the Indian Navy popping up.
But recently, just to tell you something weird, a streamer. So obviously, you get all these particular streamers that have now popped up as a career lifestyle. I'm not talking about the people that are doing OF, please, guys. I'm talking about the other streamers.
Oh, yeah, they're making money. Sorry.
Oh, no, they are making tons of money. I'm even so jealous. I've been thinking about a career change since Friday when I saw the one particular video.
Uh-huh.
It was a video based upon why do certain particular
athletes yeah.
transition. Oh, I sent you the video.
Oh, remember? Yeah, indeed.
Transition from that to
taking off their clothes for money
or showing more skin than usual.
Uh-huh.
So in that specific scenario, there was a streamer who decided to go to this island.
Why?
The Indian authorities doesn't allow anyone
no.
to contact or come in contact with. He just decided out of himself, announced it and got in a little boat. He took a goodie bag with him that had stuff like a can of Coke and stuff like that in it. He tried making contact with the tribe. No one came out. He didn't get a response. That was the lucky side. That was the lucky side.
Because if he did.
Because if someone came out, that arrow is this long, Helmo.
Yep.
They've got arrows this long if I stretch out my arms.
And they're snipers.
Yeah. And that arrow will be painful. So, he decided to go to the coast, leave a goodie bag. It was a can of Coke and...
Jesus Christ.
I think like something like M&M's, a packet of M&M's. No, not the wrapper, guys. There's literally the sweets M&M's. And there was something else he left. Got back in his boat, sailed off. And then the Indian authorities got to him. And then what they did, they interrogated him and they went and recuperated these particular things. Luckily, no one from that tribe actually picked up or consumed any of these things. The first reason that the Indians say do not come into contact with the people on this island is because there are modern diseases
that
those guys have not adapted to.
Yeah. A Spanish flu.
Everything, Helmut.
Remember.
Everything.
Because this is this is a plague that was, that plagued Europe, but it had not popped up in South America before. And then they decided to take it there, and boy, oh boy.
But the reason why it's known as Spanish flu.
Why?
Because it's only the Spanish media that spoke about it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
The rest, what did they do?
They were just treating people that were sick in the hundreds. So if you're looking at poor communication, then you see, oh, so the world did go through something like this before. Like what happened in the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
And obviously, what was one of the funny things that we saw in COVID, Helmut? Do you know what was one of the funny things?
Apart from the fact that,
goats were walking around in people's towns.
Reverse psychology works.
Yeah.
During COVID-19, that's one thing I learned. Reverse psychology works. When you tell people to stay in, they go out.
And not just that.
You tell people to go out, they stay in.
Yeah. So, One of the funny things was literally in the global scheme of things of the environment, the ozone layer, the hole in the ozone layer.
Oh, the recovery.
The recovery sped up in that 2 years because there were no planes flying.
Yeah.
Actually, the oxygen or the atmospheric level around where the hole is, it's literally just the thinner part of the atmosphere, dear listeners. That part, became thicker. Almost like rehabilitation. It became thicker, is what the scientists noted. That the hole literally rehabilitated because there were no more people flying around. Everyone was concentrated and were told stay indoors. Well, no one was as bad. you can most obviously think, Helmut, the African police are most not like the police in other countries. I mean, like in Australia, people were literally fined, they were arrested, and that thing sat on your record.
Yeah, well,
if you just decided to go walk around and shout at your neighbor at that gate.
In some country, you are told that by the police that if we find you, we will beat you. I'm like, I love my country.
Still staying on trees and forests. Okay, so one of the particular unique things that obviously comes out from this forum of the forest is that they're talking about an inclusivity aspect, a sustainable management aspect of things.
Yep.
Using a resource to the benefit of all. Now, here's where the discussions are interesting. One of the main sponsors of this program. Now, when I say sponsor, I'm saying it's a specific.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes for Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back. It's half past the hour of five. But before we continue, do we have another live read?
No, only a little bit later.
Only a little bit later.
Yeah.
So now on the inclusivity part, is it development plans? How do we develop everyone? And you have climate change combating mechanisms coming out of the Paris agreements. How do we help everyone, all other countries, especially the developing ones, also participate in this, in what we have now known as the climate change mitigation strategies, because it all costs money. And it's, again, the same thing that pops up in the discussion on forums, which is on itself falls under the climate change mitigation strategies.
Mm.
Now, what that raises up is how do you make all the countries participate in whatever measures of climate change that you are going to come up with? Because a lot of them will tell you, well, I would like to participate, but as you can see, the only source of fuel we have here is wood. Therefore, we are going to cut down trees. Until we figure out another source of energy, we're going to have to cut down trees.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Well, you can't stop, a million people from cutting down trees by sending in an army. You're going to risk, an all-out war. And wars themselves are just, giant fireballs flying everywhere. You are not helping. And when does wherever those fireballs land, they are no living trees after that.
Mm.
And then the soil is ruined because of all the ingredients that makes up whatever concoction that was put together to make that kaboom. So solving the problem in a way that does not risk any type of more social or economical, kickback, I think it's more like performing surgery. So you have to get rid of the tumor without killing the patient. And by the way, money is needed.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, Helmut, that they speak towards, and this is now the same particular forum, guys, they speak towards an aspect known as global forest goals, with these particular goals obviously highlighting what countries should try and do. Now, in most cases, you don't see an economic side of things in it. You don't immediately identify what's the true economic development plan associated to sustainable forest management for that matter. But then that particular engagement that we had last year, specifically about agroforestry, starts to pop up into this particular thing.
Yeah.
Because, for example, agroforestry is usually when you've got like established agricultural practices, but you just need to find a way of blending management of a bunch of trees
mm-hmm.
on your let's call it on your small particular agricultural piece of land
mm-hmm.
with whatever thing you're doing in terms of which is the agricultural activity. You just need to blend it, and you need to find some sort of a balance going on there, which obviously led to the presentation that I had to sit through as well, where these two guys got up. I think it's somewhere in Zambezi region, and they're talking about the agroforestry endeavor that this gentleman is talking about,
mm-hmm.
but the crops that the guy is growing are water intensive plants. And then remember, I asked the guy, so where do you get your water from? And then he says, well, I actually misappropriated because, he actually.
Yeah, I remember that confession.
As saying sorry, he donates to the local school, bananas and other particular fresh produce and to the community as well. But the community still mumble because he takes the largest chunk of water. And remember, the water comes from a borehole in the community, which shows a little bit of an unsustainable practice at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because now here's the sustainability side of things as well, Helmut. Last year, the discussions have been that the Minister of Agriculture was activating the Water Management Act. I've heard it twice. Once this year, and last year specifically, after coming back from Russia regarding the uranium discussion
mm-hmm.
between Namibia and Russia and the developments obviously happening in the east of the nation, I went to a media engagement organized by the company, that particular company, where they had their lawyer giving legal presentation
mm-hmm.
on this act. And I recorded it. I still have it. So if anyone is asking me, what proof do I? I record everything. I walk in with my recorder and I record. And he explained it there that the act had been dormant for something like almost 10 years since 2013.
Yeah, of course.
In this act, Helmut, which is obviously the bone of contention between the activity. So that's the future economic, potential that the region of Omaheke can have. And that, for example, a central government authority, the Ministry of Water, the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Forestry, Ministry of Water, Agriculture
and Reform,
has in terms of this particular bone of contention, because at risk has been the complaints that that aquifer, the one that crosses into Botswana
yeah.
Northern South Africa and comes back into Namibia, that aquifer would be in danger.
Contaminated, yeah.
Would be contaminated. But no one knows how big that aquifer is. No, we know the size that mm-hmm. it covers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the depth of the thing. Because the reason has been, Helmut, in the notebook, obviously what I have been explained and what exists online, even from the World Uranium, that the other body, the World Uranium Body, World Uranium Council or something like that, World Nuclear Council or something like that. Not the Nuclear...
International Atomic Energy.
Not the Atomic Agency. Uh-huh. There's another one that has the...
Specifically on uranium.
Yeah, but they're the guys that measure us in terms of how many uranium is produced from mining.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys highlight the prescribed or supposed best practice in terms of how in-situ mining should be performed. And specifically, they've got their own particular analysis. Now, their analysis feeds into the, what is that UN Security Council thing? The non-proliferation guys.
The
other discussion that we have to have, yeah. Their insights.
Yeah.
Is they back up the International Atomic Agency. The International Atomic Agency is backed up by that Security Council thing, that non-proliferation side of things, that commission. And all of this is known at a UN level. Because remember, Namibia is part of the Atomic Energy, the Atomic Agency, the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Yeah.
The IAEA. We are part of that. We are not part of the International Energy Agency. We are automatically part of the nuclear one here. When you look at that particular aspect, you know, you realize, okay, so there's a template that Namibia has to work from. But then you ask the question, Helmut, about conflict. The conflict in terms of the activities that are now taking place on the ground. Namibia has an industrial goal. Namibia has an industrial ambition.
Mm-hmm.
But Namibia knows that they've got so much resources. But here's the thing. Certain particular activities come in direct conflict, for example, like something like that Water Management Act. Or it would come into conflict, for example, like something like the, what's the one's name? What's the other act's name or the other particular endeavor? The overall environmental policy and environmental management of Namibia. Because certain particular things had not been thought about in a Namibian context. You can see this, Helmut. This is as technologies, ways of production have advanced past our laws and past our particular statutes.
We're not keeping up.
We are not. Even the Americans are not even keeping up with their own stuff. I still remember as clear as day, 2 years back, 2023. Was it 2023 or 2022? Yeah, 2023. They had commissions on how to deal with cryptocurrency or with the world of the crypto financial space, where they brought in the CEOs. That's also why I said, what's the guy's name? That's now the Minister of Finance, our Minister of Finance, Itete. He was most the chairperson of the, the Economics Committee, the Committee on Economics, where they brought in the Bank of Namibia and the Ministry of Industrialization's Consumer Protection Unit. And they asked in terms of, you know, because the current Minister of Transport, Naikundi, had asked as a motion in Parliament last year, or at the start, it was last year, you know, why are banking charges so high? And I said here on air, just after that, because I had a discussion about that business and economic zone, you can't ask that question in Parliament. If you can walk into any bank, any commercial bank's branch, and you will see that there's a big, it's as big as this door. I'm lying about the door thing. It's as big as this, as these two little, sound deflector devices here next to us. It's as big as these two things, those posters. And they break down to you every cost that you pay for as a customer of that particular bank. How do you go have an engagement with a ministry's consumer protection unit and Bank of Namibia governor and his team about the costs that banks charge?
Okay, why didn't any commercial bank guy or anyone from the central bank just take a picture of that and send it to him? Like, well, that's what is accruing to your overall charge that you have charged for. Pay a transaction.
Helmut, I don't know. I don't know why an Eagle FM radio or media representative has to tell a voted in person to just walk into any bank. His own bank. He banks. He's got a bank. Because I really, tell me, he does not receive his pay in a check. Because we don't receive pay, we don't use checks anymore.
Yeah, like
checks were phased out.
He
could just walk into any bank and just ask any customer service person there. I am from this particular oversight committee. I would like to know, where do I get your bank charges? It's the most basic discussion, but they wanted public interviews. So I had to sit through those because I viewed them on digitally, and I sat there going like, "This exercise is redundant. This is a dumb exercise, because you can just walk into any bank." But anyway, that was beside the point. Nah. So when you look at those particular things,
yeah.
For example, you also get to ask the questions, Amut. The private sector is innovating things because the private sector is actually advancing aspects of society.
Yeah.
But then you get, for example, legislators, lawmakers who don't factor in that certain things are changing in the economy and that the change actually has to be, you have to measure it. You have to monitor it every time because you don't want to hear statements, for example, like the National Development Plan 5 analysis and where are we, the Commerce Region engagement that I went to at the Commerce Regional Council's hall. When I got there, the guy from the National Planning Commission and the regional planner, the Commerce Regional Planner gentleman also said it's very difficult to monitor and evaluate.
What?
I will say it again. Two men, high-ranking officials in government, that's now regional government and central government, saying it is very difficult to monitor and evaluate the effectiveness of development plans in terms of their implementation. Look, you can see if a project is finished, Howard. You know, because there was a tender. There was funding allocated to the project. It was motivated as to why this project is needed. The project gets built. The project has a start and an end date. And when the end date comes, you know that's when we media get invited to come and take photos of the politicians shaking hands in front of the project.
Cutting a ribbon and stuff.
Exactly. That you can measure. But when you're really looking at, for example, after finishing that project, has it changed something to the community that has to use whatever was installed here? That the money was spent on.
Yeah, is it serving the purpose it was built for in the first place?
Exactly. Is it converting the change? Is it driving the change that you want? Now, here's where I got to ask you the particular question, Albert. When we take this into the forestry discussion of things, as we have to look at things, the agroforestry discussion looked as a very plausible thing. We saw a real life example. We questioned it, or I questioned it, and the guy confessed that, you know what, he was actually working in a love-hate relationship with his community.
Mm-hmm.
Even the traditional leader was like, brah, don't talk to me. Don't you dare talk to me. Because you're using more water than our goats. And he was like, you know what, I help with sustenance.
At least I'm, like, what do you call it at this point? Penance?
Yeah, it's more like a pain, but it is more like a love-hate relationship because he is still causing a pain.
Uh-huh.
But he's also technically, you know, giving something
cushioning
back.
Cushioning it in a way.
Yeah.
He's
sort of like smoothing it over with, harvest of bananas here, harvest of tomatoes there, stuff like that.
I'm sorry about your kettle not having enough water, but care for apples?
And remember, last year was the year that we actually had diminished rainfall.
Yeah.
So, at that stage, you could technically see that this literally was bordering past the love-hate discussion because now this was like, really have to stand at the end of the line. But still, so the UN Forum of the Forest or Forum on Forests, they actually focus on global forest goals. And as I said, most of this, Helmut, tries to facilitate an aspect of what they call it, like symbiotic living, meaning animal life, human life, and plant life, obviously working in one particular loop in one particular system. So they've got one goal that says reversing forest cover loss. This was the most recurring theme that all the speakers spoke of.
Reforestation of of deserts, for example.
But that was known as the Great Green Wall Initiative.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. You are basically trying to to plant trees in to cover a barren land with trees. And what's one thing that was not, you did point out that people were given money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they went back and were like, you know what? It's not that I don't like your money.
But
I mean, I tried, but that land is just...
No, but the only place they were given money was in China.
Yeah. Where else would they give them?
Because the Chinese example was that they needed... Helmut, there's a weird graphic, infographic I saw once.
And also, if you cover this, and also they were told if you if you are successful in this, yeah, you can keep the, that portion of land at least for, I don't know how, but how long in terms of period of time.
Yeah. And then grow, produce.
Yeah.
And then get it going. But before we continue, Helmut, we just need to go through a short live read.
All right.
Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever. For online this is the online qualifications postgraduate programs June 2025 intake, where the applications are now open. Velvicha University is inviting applications into the below mentioned online postgraduate programs for June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Project Management Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Project Management. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field. This is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Monitoring and Evaluation Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Monitoring and Evaluation. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a 1 year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Yeah, so... You are right in the scenario in terms of where money was given, like in the Chinese example. However, when you come to the AU example of things, Helmut, there was no money.
I'm not surprised.
But it's actually working. Is it Somalia? Or is it Kenya? Yeah, in the Kenya side of things. And in the Mali side of things. But you still have to bridge the gap here, obviously, where there are war zones. Sudan, Chad, Central African Republic, Niger.
Jesus.
But then obviously that also saw the phenomenon.
What's the point of me planting it if someone is going to, come and drive a tank through it or blow it up?
Yeah. Or when two generals decide to argue, mm-hmm, because the one wants more money. He wanted to be president.
Yeah.
So yeah. So yeah, those are the side of the weird things. And then we obviously had the, I know it was you and I, we had this running joke of last year's conference of parties on desertification.
Oh yeah, that one.
Because remember, deforestation, yeah. Remember, deforestation is tied to desertification. Because usually if you lose your large plants, it speeds up the process of loss of topsoil, loss of other plant species, or
and
the other smaller plants
being
species.
Washed away by
nutrients
heavy
get
rains
washed away,
or being blown away
by sands or winds, or wind storms become more prevalent, or sandstorms as they're sometimes also known. But sandstorms are technically found in deserts. So yeah, the thing that people don't understand what a plant does is a plant holds soil together. I had to go through the pain, through the
plant. The roots.
Yeah, you've seen it as well.
Yeah.
If you've ever tried to pull out grass.
Yeah.
From the ground, it's like that grass is telling you, "Nah, nani, I don't want to come out."
Mm-hmm.
I went through the same painful experience back on Saturday. You know, my hamstrings are all flared up, Helmut. I haven't stretched so much in a long time. So yeah, that was me trying to clean. Or, doing garden work on Saturday. So in that scenario, I was surprised in terms of how the plants, because you get re-educated in this process every time when you interact with nature, how the plants actually, Helmut, even if it's just, you've got like a pavement here,
mm-hmm,
and sand was collecting here because there was a way that sand was, because of how the water was flowing, the sand particles started accumulating against the lid. It looked like a little bit of a uphill situation, but it's like a millimeter, just about that much. just that much sand collects there, you know, in terms of water flow, surface water flow, a grass starts growing there. Because the root system doesn't have to penetrate deep like some of the plants in Namibia. The root system is literally shallow. It's, you know, that root system that just runs here in the topsoil. Try pulling out that grass, Helmut. That grass will tell you, I don't want to. I don't think I need to go. This is my rights and all those kinds of stuff. And then you realize when you're looking at the root structure and everything, it's not very shallow. Now, I was puzzled. To 2 months after the last rains, how that grass literally held that little soil. That soil was this much, Hamut.
Together.
It felt literally as a layer on top of the pavement. That's how much.
Yeah. Now, in the next 6 minutes, let me take you back you mentioned agroforestry. It's one of the ways to actually mix domestic with more like what you'd consider wild plants.
Yeah. But it's not rewilding, remember. Uh-huh. Rewilding is a larger concept.
There's rewilding.
Rewilding.
Jesus.
Uh-huh. They want to bring in rewilding, just to finish that. In Wales and in eastern parts of the UK, specifically, because that's where they had forests. Now, at one stage, the guy that's behind the rewilding initiative in the UK also wants to bring back wolves. And then all the farmers were like, hell
no. Are you high?
They were like, no, because the UK doesn't have wolves anymore. They were hunted out into extinction. So do you see the negativity?
So basically, what we are looking at is a textbook example of where we are headed if not enough control measures are put in place.
Just to give you another indicator, Hamut, what many people think is actually a bad animal, for example, wolves.
Yeah.
Wolves are a very good indicator in most environmental management practices, specifically like in North America and in Europe. Wolves are a good indicator specifically of how nature is being managed or what happens to nature, the various elements in nature. Because of the two world wars that Germany engaged in, their entire wolf population was decimated. The same too also in France, the same too also in Belgium. And Germany now has Austrian wolves in its natural parks. Because they have natural parks.
Uh-huh.
They've had to bring in Austrian wolves to, you know, to acclimatize.
The last time they did that, it didn't end well. Okay, that was a human being. So let's see if wolves are...
No, but this is obviously based upon, you know, their own nature conservation aspect.
Yeah.
Because obviously as a Namibian sitting here, I want to see that the Europeans are also doing nature conservation in their neighborhood. Because obviously they are funding nature conservation efforts here.
Yeah.
In Africa, specifically in Southern Africa. So we obviously have to see whether or not they are also leading by example.
Yeah.
Another country that's obviously huge on the nature conservation side of things has been Russia. Because as I mentioned, one of the speakers obviously earlier.
Yeah, came from Russia.
Came from Russia.
It was a lady.
No, it was a guy. He was the guy that was the only guy that couldn't, that of the first six that didn't speak English. Oh, even the Iranian guy was speaking English.
Is it the eucalyptus plant that is native to Australia?
Yeah, them and another tree.
That eucalyptus oil, every country has its, every tree or every plant has its, has its defense mechanism when it comes to dealing with, every plant has a way that it disperses its seeds and also a defense mechanism either from, from insects that feeds on it or from competition with other plants when it comes to everything, from sunlight to nutrition. Another plant that I find fascinating that is native to the Mediterranean is what is known as a sister's plant. It's a very fascinating plant the way that it fights off competition is somewhere in the middle, in the midday of summer, it naturally produces very flammable oils.
Mm.
So somewhere in the middle of summer with the increase in temperature, it literally bursts into flame. and ban everything around it. Now, this usually happens when its seeds are ripe enough. Now, the seeds are not flammable, but they are coated in a thick layer that helps it survive the inferno. But all other plants around it that's not having those defense mechanisms in place are going to be banned out.
Yeah.
Now, this is done, it's more of a sacrifice. It's the same thing that you see with, with more like, is it the red salmons?
Mm.
They have to migrate from the oceans back to the streams where they, where their eggs hatched. And then they die off, and most of the adults die off because of exhaustion and lack of food and stuff.
Mm.
And then the eggs that were laid when they hatch, they have to find their way to the ocean. It's a more of a sacrificial type of continuation of species.
Mm.
And you have eucalyptus oil, plants also produce eucalyptus oil that basically that's poisonous to other plants, so that they can have a resource all to themselves. But commercial break.
Journey to the F&B segment every Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. live on Eagle FM for early morning dose of financial education and account protection. The F&B segment is proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So on the agroforestry, planting, take for example, crops around plants that are, that are not crops. Isn't that going to lead to some kind of competition when it comes to both the sunlight, especially nutrition?
It's probably also going to come to competition, Helmut, in terms of space. Usually when it comes to agriculture, you're talking about space.
Yeah.
Remember at the start of our discussion, you referenced that COP30.
Yeah.
They are going to clear land just to build a road to get to the facility, which is going to be in the Amazon. And they've got to clear land again to build that facility to house that facility.
Yeah, where they will talk about how to save the
planet. But on the side, they were basically damaging parts of the environment to have this discussion. But anyway.
It's like me telling my girlfriend I'm cheating on you to save our relationship. Most probably the worst example I've ever come up with.
But anyway, yeah. So when you look at that specific example that you used there. Ne?
The forest one or the relationship one?
No, the forest, not the relationship one. The forest one is so mind-boggling because it's literally like what happened two cops back, the cop that was held in UAE,
where you went
to go have a climate of a conference of parties engagement in an oil-producing country, one of the largest oil-producing countries.
Yep.
Before that, the 2021 or the 2021 one, where they held it in Scotland, which was an oil and gas territory of the UK.
Aha.
So when you sit with these particular, sort of like nuances.
More of a dilemma.
Oh, Egypt was Mr. One between UAE and Scotland. Egypt, Sharm el Sheikh. So you sit with these conundrums of going like, what's going on here?
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Like at this point, we are talking, that's for sure. Talking, we got that figured out.
Yeah.
But they're doing part.
Do you know what actually would also be a conundrum?
Uh-huh.
Brazil is also an oil-producing country.
Kettle.
oil producing country.
And cattle.
No, the cattle are still fine because you and I, we still have to work our ways around how deadly is a cat, like a cow.
Yeah, but
a herd of cattle's farting.
Yeah,
compared, to the environment.
Yeah, compared to the production, more like the uses of everything, natural gas, cattle is just a couple of angels that you're looking at.
Because here's the thing, Helmut. I read that part of the IPCC report, the one that came out in 2022.
Yeah.
I read that part of the report in terms of the accusation that they made about Argentina and Brazil's,
the major contributors.
Livestock.
Yeah.
Specifically being problematic. Yeah. That their livestock sectors. And both Brazil and Argentina were like, nah, you're writing rubbish about our sectors.
Uh-huh.
But then you understand from the scientific eyesight, they were saying, well, because you guys ship so much red meat internationally, there are so much, concentrations of these cattle together in the processing areas.
Mm-hmm.
And at these processing areas, these cattle are they're giving off a lot of methane.
So basically everything in large concentration is a bad idea.
Exactly. Hence one of the biggest reasons has always been the cities of India, Beijing, because Beijing has very bad air pollution in some parts of the year. Indian cities have the worst air pollution throughout the whole year. And what is most of this air pollution, what are the contributors of these things? It's usually human activity, driving your cars, in many cases.
All those, assembling and making all the stuff that you're doing halfway across the planet.
I mean, if you just go to one of the most highly polluted cities in the world, you'll find them in Asia.
Yeah.
You'll find them in either in Thailand or in Indonesia. No, not Indonesia. It's either Thailand or the Philippines.
Malaysia.
Bangladesh. India.
Oh, Bangladesh.
Go to the city. Just go look at that thing, Helmut. You'll find the world's most polluted cities are all in Asia.
But one thing we are ignoring is these are like the manufacturing hubs of a lot of things that we consume.
Exactly.
Now, since we are talking about we have all these goals pertaining to the climate mitigation strategies, climate change mitigation strategies, and also at the same time we have goals to industrialize.
Mm.
Don't you see the conflict between these two things?
That's most the particular point that I also highlighted a little bit earlier in our talk. We've got things like the Water Management Act, but industrialization requires a lot of water.
Yeah.
So I understand, you and I understand from our hydrogen analysis, because hydrogen fits part of Namibia's industrialization roadmap.
Yeah.
Hydrogen is going to use, but the hydrogen production is going to use seawater, the desalination that they would need. But that's only one of the phases. Remember, that's the Luderitz phase.
Yeah.
So we still have to understand what's happening here at the Vulfus phase. And then phase three would be the phase that would be the, how I see it, is that they would have to build a whole new city or town in, because Kunene has a shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
They have to build a city or a town there. With its own particular production level.
That's a massive undertaking.
That is. That's phase three of things. That's phase three of things, Elmer. And when you look at that particular planning, you're obviously going to ask yourself the question. Industrialization has a pre-manufacturing phase of things. So there's going to be a lot of investment to build the thing up.
Yeah.
Then there's going to be manufacturing phase. And then there's going to be, like you and I highlighted, for example, in that mining report, there's going to be the
decommissioning.
The decommissioning phase. There's going to be a decommissioning phase of things. But obviously in industrialization, you're not talking about decommissioning. You're talking about longevity.
Sustenance.
And sustainable use and sustainable management and sustainable production.
Sustainable into the infinite future means you need infinite resources.
That too.
We don't have that.
However, hydrogen is the most abundant.
Abundant, about 70%.
Isn't it the most abundant, more than carbon?
Carbon is 0.00000.
No, I'm not talking about like in the atmosphere.
Oh.
It's how often it
not carbon
appears.
Dioxide, just carbon.
Just carbon.
Yeah.
So hydrogen is the most common the most common molecule that you find everywhere.
Hydrogen is a lot, and it's very, I mean, it's a very stubborn element.
Yeah. It's the most common one, but they know what's the easiest resource to extract it from is from water, not from the air.
So let's anyway. Let's just get it from water. Yeah. And last time I checked, we have a lot of it. Undrinkable for the most part, but we have a lot of it.
Yeah.
9 minutes past the hour of six. That brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place here on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. From me, you all have a blessed payday, Tuesday.
On my side, dear listeners, let's see each other again, same time, same place. Enjoy the rest of your programming. Or the rest, the rest of your programming in our company.
And of course, coming up next is business and economic segment.
Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.